So, second hour today is about free field propagation, outdoor, free air, no obstacle, no room, no walls, no buildings, just in free air. And we will consider a very special and simple kind of sound source, which is called a point source. Of course, a point source cannot exist in practice. For pushing energy into air, you need a surface with a certain area. No area, no power. So, this means that in practice, the point source does not exist. But what does matter, really, is that the source is small, but compared with the wavelength and with the distance to the receiver. When the source is small, but compared to the wavelength and compared to the distance of the receiver, the source can be considered a point source, also if it is a truck or an aircraft, which is not really small. But when you are 1 kilometer apart, also an aircraft becomes a point source, okay? So the mathematics of the point source of the spherical wave is quite complex. It's complex in every sense. It's complex also in the algebraical sense of the word, because you have to do with complex numbers, and people don't love complex numbers. The imaginary unit, those things are not nice. But we need to work with this complex number for understanding what happens. So this slide shows you how we derive the D'Alembert equation. The D'Alembert equation is the wave equation, and this equation describes any kind of sound field, not only the spherical wave or the planar wave inside the pipe. Those are just particular and very simple cases. The D'Alembert equation, if you manage to solve it, can solve the sound field in this room, inside a car, inside the exhaust system of an engine, everywhere. But in difficult geometries, solving this equation becomes very difficult. This equation relates time derivative, with spatial derivative. C is the speed of sound, and the variable of the D'Alembert equation is the field potential phi. Field potential phi is a strange quantity because it is related both to particle velocity, v, and to sound pressure, p. In particular, the spatial derivative of phi gives you the velocity, the temporal derivative of phi gives you the pressure. So phi is a quantity which is the connection between velocity and pressure. It is possible to define phi because there is an equation which relates the spatial gradient of pressure with the temporal gradient of velocity. And this is called the Euler equation, which is the very old first Newton equation, force equal mass per acceleration, written for the acoustic quantity. So the mass is the mass of a unit volume of air, and we call this rho, the higher density. Acceleration is, of course, the derivative of velocity, and the force acting to the air particle is proportional to the spatial gradient of sound pressure. In practice, this law ensures us of the existence of the potential. When we have the potential, we can write the D'Alembert equation, which, when solved, gives you back both velocity and pressure. Because if you know phi in your sound field, by the knowledge of phi, you can derive back the velocity and the pressure, so you know everything of your sound field. That's the theory. Now we have to solve this. I cannot solve this. When I did my analysis 2 exam at the time, I only got 20. It was my worst vote, and solving differential equation for me had always been a problem. So I am not going to solve the Euler equation here for you. It is solved on textbooks, and I am happy with that. Okay? Acousticians are practical people. We use equation when we need them. When the equation is already solved, no reason to solve them again. Okay? So, the solution is on the textbooks, and we search for the solution of a very simple case, the so-called pulsating sphere solution. So we have a ball, like a sphere, or like a football ball, which is changing his radius, is pumping, is squeezing and inflating, okay? And doing that, of course, it radiates sound. We suppose a cosinusoidal motion of the velocity of the surface. So, again, as in the plane wave inside the tube, also in this case, we assume a sinusoidal law of motion. This makes the computation easier, because making derivative of sine and cosine is quite easy, okay? Without loss of generality, because we will see in next lesson that there is a theorem called the Fourier theorem that tells you that any complex waveform can always be replaced by a number of sinusoids with proper amplitude, gain and phase. So in practice, if we analyze the sound, we end up with a number of sinusoids and we write the equation just for one of them, and then we can repeat the computation at every frequency and cover the whole spectrum. So the single frequency solution can be generalized to a wide band solution simply summing the result of different frequencies. It's that easy. So we consider only this source, a spherical sphere pulsating, and the pulsation law, the velocity of this surface, is a cosinusoidal law with a given angular frequency omega, and omega, you know, is 2 pi Greek multiplied by f, the frequency in Hertz. And this, tau is time, of course. Another important quantity of a sound source, of every sound source, is the source strength Q, also called volume velocity. This is just the product of the velocity multiplied the area of the surface. I told you before, no area, no sound, no power. Okay? So you cannot have really a point source, because a point source radiates no sound. You should have a sphere of a certain radius R, because this gives you a certain surface S. Without such a surface, you don't radiate any source strength. So, the sound being radiated on the surface can be expressed in Euler notation. What is Euler notation? Instead of writing the cosine of omega t, we write e, the base of the exponential function, the Knepper number, 2.71, rises to a complex power, which is j omega tau, where j is the imaginary unit, the square root of minus 1. This is the Euler formula, which expands the exponential shown here in a real part, which is cosine omega tau, so it is this one, and an imaginary part, which is j sine of omega tau. What's the meaning of the imaginary part? The answer is quite crude. It has no meaning. Imaginary things do not exist. Come back. We are acousticians, practical people. Pressure is a real quantity. Particle velocity is a real quantity. There is no imaginary velocity. Imaginary velocity does not exist. So, all to the Euler formula tell you that this exponential function is equal to this one, you can subtly think that the imaginary part, does not exist. It does not exist. It is imaginary. Something which is imaginary, by definition, does not exist. In the real world, in the formula, it exists. In the real world, it does not. So, we use this exponential notation because with the exponential notation, it is much easier to solve the D'Alembert equation. Without the exponential notation, no one is capable of solving that equation. So it is a mathematical trick. But remember, there is no physical meaning. The physical meaning of the imaginary part is zero. It has no physical meaning. It's just an elegant mathematical trick for managing an equation which was not easy to solve with the cosine function, is much easier to solve with the exponential. And when we solve the Euler equation and we compute back from phi, which I am not even writing for you, we compute back from phi, we compute back velocity, or we can compute back pressure, of course. First we compute back velocity, and when you compute back velocity from the solution of the Euler equation, we get this expression. When we compute back pressure from the D'Alembert equation, we get this other expression. These days, they are complex. They tell you the velocity at any given time, at any given distance from the source center. Of course, this solution only works for small r larger than large r. That is outside of the spherical source. There is a something also inside the ball. That is quite interesting too, what happens here inside. But that's not the solution we are writing. Inside the sphere there is a wave traveling in towards the center of the sphere. And what happens in the center of the sphere? Something completely crazy. Pressure goes to infinity, of course, going to the center of the sphere. And having a pressure going to infinity can have some technical application. The first technical application which was found was not really very nice because it was making the uranium in the atomic bomb to ignite and explode. That is actually the mechanism for making an uranium bomb to explode. Create an acoustical excitation over the boundary of a sphere. The wave traveling in through the uranium will pack in the center, reaching such an high pressure to squeeze the electron inside the atom of uranium, igniting the nuclear reaction and making the bomb to explode. So this was the first practical solution of the spherical wave traveling in. But say that we are all interested in the traveling wave out of the sphere. I don't think any of you is going to build an atomic bomb. So let's stay far from that topic. We have an outward traveling wave. We see that is outward traveling because the minus sign here telling you that when the time is running on, the space is running away. You find the same signal in positions which are far and far from the source while the time is passing. If the wave was traveling in, here there will be a pulse. Okay. So this is the outward traveling wave. It has an amplitude which is given by Vmax, but it also changes the amplitude of the wave as you go away from the source. And generally speaking, the amplitude reduces. Going far and far from the source, you will see the sound to become weaker and weaker. This is particularly simple for pressure, because in case of pressure, you have only one divided R here, and all other the part of the equation does not depend on R. So the amplitude pressure decrease exactly proportional to 1 divided R. Instead, velocity as the pressure will change in a complex way, complex also in the mathematical sense, because you see here there is this factor 1 plus jkr, and k is called the wave number, is omega divided c, which is 2 pi greater f divided c, or 2 pi greater slash lambda, is called the wave number, and as the dimension, the unit of k is meter raised to minus 1, is a reciprocal of a meter. So chi r is dimensionless, is a pure number, chi r. Also k large r. This is variable, of course, this is constant. So this ratio here is changing with distance. And being a complex number, the ratio between the real and imaginary part is also changing with distance. So the velocity field is really complex around the sphere. The pressure field is very simple, because this is constant, and the pressure simply decreases as 1 divided r. You double the distance, you half the pressure. You quadruplicate the distance, pressures become 1/4, and so on. And we are pressure, remember. So for us, who are pressure, the point source field, the spherical field, is very easy, very simple. You go far and far from the source, and the sound decreases and decreases. Very simple. Here you see the comparison between the modulus of velocity changing with r. At small distance, the modulus of velocity change with this complex factor here. So the modulus of velocity, when kr is very large, also decrease as 1 slash r. If instead, when kr is very small, the so-called near field, close to the source, modulus of velocity change as 1 divided r squared. So in practice, the velocity boosts a lot. Let me make a very stupid chart. We chart here the modulus of pressure and the modulus of velocity with distance from the source, r, small r. Pressure increase with 1 slash r, so if this is actually log r, the logarithmic of the distance is a logarithmic scale chart. If this is log of r, you see that pressure simply goes down as r increases, but velocity at large distance, it takes the same behavior as pressure, but becoming closer, it starts boosting much more. You have much more velocity than pressure. Pressure is red, velocity is blue, because at large distance, they both are proportional to 1 divided r. At small distance, velocity becomes much larger. Okay? So, at large distance, both go down with the same slope, and close to the source, you have much more velocity than pressure. This is the so-called proximity effect. In practice, this happens at low frequency when you place your microphone close to the source, for example to your mouth. There is a singer keeping the microphone in his hand, and you have always seen the singer doing these things, changing the distance of the microphone from the mouth. What is the effect of changing the distance of the microphone from the mouth? Of course, bringing the microphone close makes the sound louder. Of course, it's closer. But the electronic inside this device compensates for this, at least partially, more or less, but it attempts to compensate the gain. So in practice, he is not bringing the microphone close to the mouth for boosting the gain. For boosting the gain, you just turn a knob, it's easier, okay? Instead, what is changing is the low frequency response. A Singer microphone is not a pressure microphone, is at least partially a velocity microphone. This kind of microphone employed here, we will have a lesson on microphone later on, they are called cardioid microphone. A cardioid microphone is half sensitive to pressure, but also half sensitive to particle velocity. The more directive is the microphone, if it becomes an hypercardioid, the more it will be sensitive to particle velocity. So the more proximity effect you get. In practice, bringing the microphone close to your mouth boosts the low frequency. So when singing, you want to create very low frequency signal. You are not really a bass singer, so you don't take power at low frequency. But if you bring the microphone close to the mouth, then you get a lot of low frequency. So it's an equalization. The singer changes the distance of the microphone from his voice for changing the frequency response of the microphone. Okay? That's the trick. Professional singers are trained by a good sound engineer to manage the thing properly. Home singer, no one explained then the acoustic of a recording microphone and how to get advantage of this. Nevertheless, many homemade singers still learn to use the proximity effect because it's so immediate the effect. You bring the microphone close, a lot of low frequency. You bring the microphone far and high frequency. Okay, so this effect is so immediate that people use that without knowing the physics which is behind. That's quite typical of many things in the world. They started to do that far before this theory was written. Okay. But what is interesting is also related to the imaginary part. I told you, the imaginary part of the velocity is meaningless. That's true until you only look at velocity. But when you look at pressure and velocity simultaneously, you see that the imaginary part has some meaning. And the meaning is the phase shift between the pressure sinusoid and the velocity sinusoid. In fact, if you see on an oscilloscope the pressure wave and the velocity wave, they are not in phase. Generally speaking, there will be a time shift between pressure and velocity. The two waves are not in phase. This is the meaning of all those imaginary things written in the equation. And you make this very evident, making the ratio between pressure and velocity, and this ratio is called the impedance of the sound field. The impedance in the spherical field is not constant and is not equal to rho zero c as it was for the plane wave. In fact, you still have the rho zero c factor, but this is multiplied by this strange factor. Here it is expanded in a real part and in an imaginary part. And this imaginary part go to zero when R go to infinity. This means that very far from a point source, pressure and velocity come back to be in phase, and the impedance come back to rho zero c. So in practice, you have a plane wave. Very far from a point source, the wavefront is a so little curvature that you can think that it is flat. it is a plain way. But close to the source, these terms becomes bigger and bigger, and these give phase shift, significant phase shift. When you go to the center of the sphere, the pressure and velocity phase shift go to perfect quadrature, 90 degree phase shift, which means no power again. And this again is one of the reasons for which a very small source cannot radiate sound, because pressure and velocity go out of phase and you have no power, because when the two signals are in quadrature, there is no net energy transfer from the vibrating surface to the air. If the source is bigger, the phase shift will not be close to 90 degrees, and so it will be able to radiate some power. This chart shows you the magnitude of the impedance, which is, generally speaking, much smaller than ρ0c, and it reaches ρ0c only at 10 times the wavelength, when kr is 20, is 10. When kr is 10, it is a plane wave. When kr is very small, so you are close to the vibrating surface, the acoustic impedance falls down. And when the acoustical impedance is very low, the capability to transfer energy also is very low. So in practice, your sound field is not taking energy out from the vibrating surface. The surface vibrates a lot, but it does not radiate efficiently, because the acoustical impedance of the air close to the vibrating surface becomes very, very low, and so it cannot transfer energy. This is the phase of the impedance, so it is the phase between pressure and velocity, and this tends to zero at large distance from the source, and is still close to the center of the sphere. You have a lot of phase shift, close to 90 degrees, so actually, again, no energy can be radiated efficiently from your point source. This is the reason for which, for radiating low frequency, you need a large woofer, a large loudspeaker. You cannot radiate low frequency with a loudspeaker of this size. A loudspeaker of this size is 4 centimeters, can only radiate very high frequency. At very low frequency, it is KR is too small and it cannot radiate any power. Let we transfer the concept of power in the concept of intensity. We define intensity as the ratio of power divided surface. And what I told you is that the power, once radiated by the source, stays the same at every distance. Power don't change with distance, pressure change with distance, velocity change with distance, but power not. Once the power is radiated, at every distance from the source, you find the same power. So it is a stupid question to ask, if I measure the power at 1 meter from the source, how much will be the power at 10 meters from the source? The answer is basically stupid. The power will be the same. The power does not change with distance. Okay? What changes is intensity, because intensity is the ratio of power divided surface. So, if you are at a certain distance r from your point source, and you measure here some power w, if you double the distance, the power will be the same. The surface will be 4 times more, because the surface increases with the square of the distance, so the intensity will be 1/4. If you triplicate the distance from the source, the power does not change. The surface is now 9 times the original one, so now the intensity is 1/9 of the original intensity here. This is the intensity law. Intensity decreases with the square of distance. And this provides us with a very easy way to compute the sound level in decibel in a spherical field. In fact, the surface is just expressed as the surface of a sphere, 4 pi greek r squared. Very simple. So this formula allows you to compute the intensity of your source at every distance from the center of it. If we transfer this to the decibel scale, remembering the definition of intensity level in decibel, 10 times the logarithm of the intensity divided the reference intensity, we substitute this expression here, we multiply and divide for the reference power, and the reference power is 10 to minus 12 watt. You repackage your equation using the logarithm property, and now you discover that this factor, 10 times the logarithm of W0 divided I0 is 0, because both are the same number, 10 raised to minus 12. 10 times the logarithm of W divided V0 is the power level in decibel. 10 times the logarithm of 1 divided 4 pi greek is a number which is minus 11. And the last term is minus 20 log of the distance r, because the square, the power comes out from the logarithm and becomes a factor in front. This is the very simple formula for computing sound levels in free field, in excuse me?
How can power transmit, for instance,
what attenuation? Who is causing this attenuation? That's free field. There are no obstacles, no tree, no grass. Who is attenuating the sound? Only the geometrical divergence is attenuating the sound. This is the only cause of level reduction in free field. The spreading of the same energy on a surface which becomes larger and larger, so the energy dilutes on a larger surface, but the power does not reduce. Air is a perfectly elastic medium, at least at frequencies which are not too large. At 20 kHz, air is transforming energy into heat. But at 1 kHz, it takes kilometers before a small amount of energy translates to heat. So in practice, this formula holds, it works, it's experimentally verified up to very large distance, up to 1 kilometer, for example. So for practical usage, this formula is perfect. And it's very simple, actually. You just need to know the power of the source. And remember, nowadays, for many noise sources, the value of LW is printed over the machine. There is a round circle over the cover of the machine, and then it is written LW equal and a number. So you know the power level. And with this very simple formula, you can compute the sound level in decibel at a given distance from the source. So, really, it was a very complex formula, but in the end, everything becomes very, very easy. This was for a perfectly spherical source, which again is a mathematical abstraction. A real source, like a loudspeaker, does not radiate the sound with the same intensity in front and on the back. Typical loudspeaker, like those one in this room, radiate more sound frontally and less sound. They typically have a intensity radiation polar pattern like this one. There is one prepared direction where the intensity is larger, and in other direction the intensity is weaker. The blue one instead is the perfect spherical source, radiating the same intensity in every direction. What happens in practice is that we can easily extend the free field formula to a directive source, simply inserting or adding a factor, a corrective factor, which is called the directivity factor. How is defined the directivity factor Q? The directivity factor is the ratio of the intensity in one given direction, I theta, to the average intensity, which a sound source with the same power but omnidirectional would radiate in every direction. So in practice, for a real world source, you don't only need to know the power, you also need to know the directivity factor, which usually is measured in an echoic room like this one for loudspeaker, but it is not measured for noise source. For most noise source, you know LW, but you don't know the directivity factor. And I will show you in a short time what are the prudential directivity factor to employ with noise source when you don't know the real directivity. Okay? So in practice, when you know the intensity in a given direction, you can still propagate along this direction following the same law which holds for a omnidirectional source. Of course, you don't have to change the direction. You must go far and far and far, keeping the same angle theta. If you change the direction, of course, if you go in that direction, there the sound will be weaker, because the intensity being radiated in this direction was smaller than the intensity being radiated in this direction. But nevertheless, if you keep the direction, the formula works. This formula with the additional directivity factor still remains very simple. So in practice, how to express it in word? The expression of this spherical wave equation is very simple. When you double the distance, the sound pressure level decreases by 6 decibels, because there is 20 log 2. 20 log 2 means 6 decibels less. So if you chart the sound level in decibel, LP or LE or L whatever, it does not matter, versus R, the decrease has a constant slope of minus 6 dB per doubling. Now, doubling. Okay. Minus 6 dB per doubling, this is the slope of the decay, of the spatial decay, due to the geometrical or spherical divergence. The diverging area, the increasing area, reduce the intensity. That's the concept. There is no higher absorption. It is not energy being transferred from acoustical energy to thermal energy. It's not dissipation. There is no dissipation. It is just that the energy dilutes on a wider area, so the sound level decreases going far from the source. But this decrease is quite effective, 6 decibels per doubling distance. So it provides you a very easy way to controlling, for example, noise pollution due to an industrial source, like a machinery, a compressor, a fan or something like that. It's too noisy. The noise is disturbing you. Simply go away. Go more far from the source and the level will decrease. Okay? So this provides you a very simple and cheap way of controlling the noise. You are outdoor, you are in the free field. The easiest way to reduce the noise is to increase the distance between the source and the receiver. It doesn't cost nothing, consequently. Of course, you need to have room for that. If you are in front of the sea, going more far means to go into the water, and this is not feasible, of course, but here in Parma, in the flat land, where we have all the room we want, it's so stupid to build a house close to a factory. It's so stupid. I don't really understand why people do that. Then they complain. There is a lot of noise. You need to apply silencer to change the machinery or to close off the factory at all. But why you did build your house at 10 meters from a factory? Just build it at 100 meters or at 1 kilometer. It's flat land, grass everywhere. What's the problem? There is really no need to build house close to the factory. And instead, stupid guys continue asking to build very close to factories. And of course that's stupid. Okay, let's go to the directivity. For loudspeaker you know the directivity, because the loudspeaker manufacturer give you a very nice chart showing you the polar pattern of the directivity of your loudspeaker. And so with loudspeaker everything is easy. But for a noise source you don't know the directivity. So how can you make rough computation without knowing the directivity? This is how you do. When the sound source is suspended in air, which is a rare case, but it is true, for example, for helicopters. Helicopters are suspended in air. Then you assume they are omnidirectional, and so the directivity factor is one. In the most common case, your sound source is on the floor. The floor is usually reflecting, because when we place a machine, you usually build a very nice concrete slab for placing the machine over it, for being capable of carrying it away, and for being easily to clean and so on, and to make maintenance to the machine. So, almost invariably, your source is located over a reflecting surface. In this case, the sound is forced to radiate not in the wall space, but only in half space, in a hemispace. So the surface is half the surface available here. The power is the same. Squeezing it in half space means having a directivity factor equal to 2, and this means plus 3 decibels. If you compute 10 times logarithm Q, and Q is 2, you get 3 decibel more than in the case of the spherical wave with no directivity. Compared to this case with no directivity, omnidirectional source, in this case you are boosting the signal by 3 decibel. In some other case, the source is not just in the center of a flat area, is close to the wall of a building. That is also a quite typical location, for example, for an air compressor. Inside the factory, you need compressed air. You place your compressor outside of the factory because it is a machine which needs to be cooled, and it also is noisy, so you don't want to have it inside your building. You place it just outside, close to the wall. Air conditioning system too is often placed this way, in the corner between the wall and the ground and the floor. In this case, the energy being radiated has only 1/4 of the wall sphere for being spreading. So the directivity factor becomes 4, and you get a boost of how many decibels? Can you compute it by brain? Plus six. And this is another very common case. The last one instead is an uncommon case. That is a source placed in a corner, like where there is this metal thing there, or there, or in the corner. When the source is inside a corner, the sound can radiate only in 1 octave of the wall sphere. So the relativity factor is 8, and the sound pressure level is boosted by how much? 9. Okay. So this is the simple rule of thumb, the stupid rule, for guessing the directivity when you don't know the real directivity. Okay. Of course, manufacturer of machine often play tricks with the directivity. For example, equipment for air conditioning, which are usually placed outdoors in this situation, usually have back poles over them, which brings the power mostly towards the sky. So if there is another building here, you don't get a lot of noise because the sound is being radiated only inside this angle, and outside this angle there is more or less silence. So if the machine is properly engineered, then you can play with the directivity for pushing the noise where it is not harmful. If the machine is not properly engineered, you can place here a barrier, a screen, a wall. If I place here a wall, I get the same effect. I create a shadow area here, and the building is protected by this screen. We will see this later. Okay? Any questions? Second breath.